The Buddha sets out 5 conditions for getting the most out of listening to the Dhamma. The first 3 have to do with respect. 1, you don't despise the speaker. You tell yourself, maybe this person knows something I don't know. Be open to that possibility. Because that's a lot of what respect is being open, not closing off your mind. The second is not despising the Dharma. Something that may not sound all that inspiring or deep at first blush may actually have more meaning than you think. So listen to it. And the third is don't despise yourself. Tell yourself that I must be able to do this, especially with the Dharma that the Buddha teaches. As he said, he's not teaching anything humanly impossible. He talks about developing skillful qualities, abandoning unskillful ones. And if it were not possible for us to do this, he wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't have taught at all. He would have just gone off and sat under a tree someplace, enjoying the bliss of release. But instead, he went to all that trouble. Think about it, walking all over India for 45 years, even up until he was 80. Where there's someone who would be receptive to his teachings, he would go. Even on the last night, there was one person who came to him with questions. At first, Ananda was reluctant to have this person see the Buddha because the Buddha was dying. But the Buddha said, have him come. They taught him. That person eventually became an arahant. So think about the compassion that went into that. That was compassion aimed at people who could benefit from the teaching. So here you are, listening to the Buddha's Dhamma. Try to be open to it, open to the fact that you can benefit from it, and you can do what he's talking about. He talks about being generous. It is possible to be generous. He talks about observing the precepts, something that can be done. He talks about developing goodwill. That too can be done. Start with goodwill for yourself. This also involves respect for yourself. You want to be happy? Well, the Buddha says that there are things you can do to be happy. So you tell yourself, if I have goodwill for myself, I'll do these things. Give them a try. Because that's all the Buddha asks for you. In respect, it doesn't mean you have to obey, right? That you have to believe. You see this in the other 2 qualities that he talks about. One is being single-minded as you listen. Really focus all your attention on the Dhamma. The word he uses, ekaka, is sometimes translated as being one-pointed. In fact, some people, when they talk about concentration, which is defined as one-pointedness or ekakata cittasa, which they translate as one-pointedness of mind, they get it so one-pointed that you can't even feel anything or hear anything, which would be impossible if this were the quality that the Buddha wants you to bring to listening. Eka means one. Aga means summit. But it also means meeting place, gathering place. So you want to gather your mind around one topic, which is the topic of the talk. And then you apply appropriate attention. Appropriate attention is asking questions. This is where we see that the Buddha is not asking you simply to believe everything he says. You ask questions. How does this apply to my suffering? How does it give recommendations or how I can stop suffering? As that for the Buddha is what appropriate attention is. It comes down to the 2 sets of teachings that he said were categorical. One was that unskillful behavior should be abandoned, and unskillful means leading to harm and suffering. Skillful behavior should be developed, leading away from suffering. The other categorical teaching is the Four Noble Truths, focused on what is your suffering after all. The Buddha identifies it as clinging to the aggregates. The aggregates are activities we engage in. We chanted about them just now. Form, your body is constantly in action. Feeling, feelings of pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain. Perceptions, the labels you apply to things, the meanings you give to them, how you identify them. Thought fabrications, the way you put ideas together, the way you talk to yourself. And finally, consciousness, your awareness of whatever's coming in at the senses, whatever's happening in the mind. We cling to these things. We cling to these things for sensual pleasure. We cling to these things because they provide us with views about what the world is like. We cling because they give us ideas of what should and shouldn't be done. We cling to them because we identify them as us or as ours. That's the big clinging. This means that the Buddha's analysis of suffering is pretty radical. Your way of defining yourself plays a large role in how you suffer. And why do you do that? He says it's because of craving. Again, craving for sensual pleasure, craving for your fascination with thinking sensual thoughts, craving for becoming, taking on an identity in a particular world of experience, your sense of who you are and the world you inhabit. You want a world. You want to take on an identity because there may be something in that world that you are capable of finding. And then craving for non-becoming. You've decided that the world you're in doesn't provide the pleasure you want, so you want to see it destroyed. These things cause you to suffer. The way out of suffering, and the Buddha says there is such a way, that's the Third Noble Truth, you can put an end to suffering, is the Eightfold Path, which comes down to three things: virtue, concentration, discernment. The Buddha is asking you to apply this framework to your problem of suffering. Again, it's not simply a matter of assent, saying, oh, yes, it must be true, or I agree with what he has to say. Each of these truths involves a duty, and it's the duties that provide you with the proof of whether these things are true or not. Suffering is to be comprehended. Its cause is to be abandoned. Its cessation is to be realized, and that's done by developing the path. So the test is in the doing. And when you think in those terms, what you pay attention to then in the talk is, what advice does this give as to what I can do about the problem of suffering? How I can understand it, how I can see the cause, gain the strength to let go of it. Because after all, suffering is the things you cling to, or the clinging itself. Its cause is craving. Well, the reason you cling to things and crave them is because you feel compelled to. Either because you want to or because you feel you have to. So the Buddha is asking you to examine your attachments really carefully. He's asking a lot, but at the same time he provides you with the path, and the path is not an onerous path. It takes effort, but it's not superhuman effort. The Buddha, after all, was a human being. All of his noble disciples started out as ordinary human beings. They just took the good qualities we have as ordinary human beings and developed them as far as they can go. And part of that is developing your powers of mindfulness, your powers of concentration, to give rise to a sense of well-being. The effort in developing is not all sweat and tears. There's a bliss that comes when you can settle down and just be with the breath. Breathe in, breathe out, and feel really good about breathing in, breathing out. And having a way of relating to your body so that the breath can nourish all the little nerves, all the little blood vessels, all the cells. Think of every cell in your body breathing in, breathing out together. Right concentration starts with rapture and pleasure. And as the Buddha said, it's the heart of the path. All the other factors are its requisites or its aids. So there's a huge emphasis on what you can do to give rise to a sense of well-being right here, right now. If you pay full attention, the paying full attention, single-mindedness, is not just in listening to the Dharma, but then paying full attention to what you're doing. As you breathe in, as you breathe out, as you relate to your breath, as you relate to the different thoughts, it would either keep you with the breath or it would pull you away. When you can find a sense of well-being in the way you breathe, then it's a lot easier to hold on to the thoughts that keep you focused here and to let go of the ones that would pull you away. So work on this. There are so many people who are afraid of pleasure. I was talking this last weekend with a woman who had been practicing a method that taught her basically to notice either there was pain or just neutral sensation, and to try to drop any sort of pleasure that may be coming in the meditation. And she said she found it hard to do when she was away from retreats. And she said, well, of course, there's no reward. You need the pleasure, not only for the sake of nourishment along the path, but it sensitizes you to areas of stress in your body, stress in your mind, that you wouldn't have noticed otherwise. Then you see that engaging in those forms of stress, or the things that cause those forms of stress, is not necessary. That's the whole purpose of the Buddha's teachings. This is why he has you bring an attitude of openness and respect. Because he's going to tell you possibilities that wouldn't have occurred to you otherwise. You can breathe in a blissful way. You can use your mind to be quiet. All too often we use our minds to run all over the place, hopping from one train of thought to another train of thought, ending up out in Siberia someplace. But here, all our thoughts aim inward to that meeting place, the singleness of mind that we bring. As the Buddha said, people who live without respect, without anything to respect, really suffer, because there's nothing to open them up to new possibilities. There's nothing to encourage them to put forth an effort with the confidence that there would be a reward. And then when you look at your behavior, there's nothing to inspire you in terms of what you've been doing. That just pulls you down. Because this is one of the things that's good about the path. As you find that you have the strength and the ingenuity to follow the path, you look at your own behavior and you find it more inspiring. Well, the Forest of Johns talk about this. They wouldn't have expected that they could have been able to do this. But they had a John Munn's example. And he kept on encouraging them, yes, this is something you can do. So again, the whole purpose of teaching the Dharma is to tell you of new possibilities, possibilities that can put an end to suffering. The purpose of listening is to open your mind to those possibilities so you can take advantage of them, because they are there. We have these potentials in body and mind. As John Lee pointed out, we have so many good potentials within us, and we use so little of them. Partly because our minds are just too blinded and too narrow. Our education narrows our focus. They're threatening to make it even more narrow, devoting all education just to helping the economy. The Buddha offers a different kind of education, an education that opens possibilities of what a human being can do. So as you respect those possibilities, explore them. It's the respect that allows you to explore them. Otherwise, you wouldn't even think they were there. But the respect comes with openness. And this openness opens the world.